on the road or off-road, Chevy Silverado is built for tough performance in any condition. Hit the road in a new Silverado pickup. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for a dealer near you. Chevy Silverado, official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
From Chicago, I am John Landecker, and Records truly is my middle name. Manfred Mann's Earth Band. Another runner through the night. Blinded by the light.
Blinded by the light. Wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night. Blinded by the light. Wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night.
All right, it's Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. So for decades, John Records Landecker has been one of Chicago's most celebrated on-air personalities. Nearly 50 years ago, he started his career on his high school radio station and later began his longest stint on the air on WLS in 1972, later The Loop, Oldies 104.3, and even a stint here at WGN. Now, John put out his autobiography called Records Is Truly His Middle Name in 2013. And now he's gone Hollywood, man. He's spending time with his daughter. Actress Amy Landecker starred the critically acclaimed comedy Transparent. And just getting back from the Emmy Awards, he's a legend in radio, inducted in the radio wing of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He is John Records Landecker. John, welcome back to WGN, my friend.
Thank you, but I have not. I want to repeat, make this perfectly clear, my fellow Americans, I have not gone to Hollywood.
I loved, because we're Facebook friends, so I'm watching you, you know, standing in line at the Emmys, hanging out with John Travolta with your beautiful daughter and the cast of her hit series. It's got to be a pretty cool experience, you know, supporting your daughter in that way.
Well, ironically,
yeah,
the John Travolta and Transparent all go back to WLS AM radio, the Big 89.
Oh, tell me this story. I'd love to hear
this. Well, in the mid-70s, when Travolta was Vinnie Barbarino on Welcome Back, Cotter, he hadn't made a movie yet, and he had a record out on RCA. So I was that big nighttime teen jock, and he came into town and was on my show at night, and then we went out to the Woodfield Mall the next day, and they expected 3,000 people, and there were 30,000 screaming teenagers and the state police, and it was crazy. And it was something that he remembered from then on, and says that that was the first moment that he realized something really big was going to happen in his career. Now, you jump ahead, Jill Soloway, the creator of Transparent, listen to WLS.
Oh, that's cool.
She's from Chicago and mentioned that to Amy, my daughter, the first time that they ever met. So all of that sort of swirls around in a big Chicago WLS pea soup of some kind.
Of course, of course. Yeah. And you know, it's, you know, you funny you mentioned that about Travolta. I talked to last weekend, it was the 40th anniversary of Charlie's Angels, so I talked to Cheryl Ladd, and she had an album out. And I think Henry Winkler had an album out. Like all these 70s actors, that was the next move.
Right.
If the show was big, you get an album deal.
Well, not only that, but, you know, the Barbarino character, that was high school.
Right.
And Travolta was somewhere in the
20s.
Quasi-teen idol category.
Yeah. Very, very cool. But how cool is that? How was the experience on Sunday? That must have been just cool being there.
It's an interesting experience. I went last year, so I had a bit of knowledge of what was going to occur under my belt.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long day. It's an extremely exhausting day for the participants who are really nominated and go through the Emmy chronological line, which is that you start getting ready at noon with a bunch of makeup and hair, and then you go to the Emmys, and then you wait, and then you stand in line to go down a photographer-packed red carpet, and then after that, there's a media red carpet, which is every media outlet in the world that you can think of, you know, Entertainment Tonight, Access Hollywood, you name it, and all the participants in the Emmys are going down this at the same time, and they all line up and are interviewed, you know, step by step down this entire gangway, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you go in and they do the broadcast, which is 3 hours. And then after that, the governor's ball, which is basically dinner. And then after that, if you are up for it, there's all sorts of
after parties.
Yeah, and you would definitely go to the party that your particular company studio
right.
is putting on.
So this is a 10, 12-hour day. I mean, this plus. I mean, this
Yeah. And it's hot. You know, it was like 90-some degrees in L.A. So the prior to getting inside the auditorium, it's always pretty. It's sweaty.
Yeah. but here's the cool thing. I mean, you're not just going, you know, oh, my daughter's on a TV show. She's on, like, the most talked about top comedy. And you can't even say in television, even though Emmys is television. It's on Amazon. I mean, you get it anywhere, really. I mean, you can go watch it on your phone. But how cool is that, you know?
Oh, it's
so proud.
It's
I'm
fantastic.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even tell you how great it is. I really don't have the words to express not only how great it is for her to be on a successful show, but also how great the people around this show are.
Yeah.
I've had the opportunity to be with them on numerous occasions other than Emmys, and they're a fantastic group of people. The you know, Jill is, and the cast is, and the director and the technical guys, and you know, the makeup people, everybody. Which I think has been unusual.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's funny. I remember Jeffrey Tambor in the 70s. Think about the 70s. He was like a character actor on like Three's Company and right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, boom, here comes Larry Sanders. Then he has Arrested Development, which was absolutely brilliant. I mean, there's not a lot of people that can wear his shoes and say they've been in so many big hit series and drive this thing. It's pretty, and plus being a groundbreaking show on top of that.
Right. And you know that this show, Transparent, is based on reality. It's what happened to Jill Soloway.
Yeah.
Her father did, later in life, express the desire to transition, and did.
Yeah.
And I think it's still in the process of that. I'm not sure.
Sure.
But definitely made the first overtures towards that direction.
And it's streaming. The new season's on right now. It's streaming as we speak, right?
Yeah. Yep, just started.
And I love that you have this fan base, you know, just from the ground up when people, because I mean, believe me, everybody knows your name. Everybody knows who you are. And I've heard you talk about this before, but, you know, I still to this day think that people think that some station manager gave you the name Records. And, you know, I'm sure it's with a lot of people. And your middle name was chosen after your grandfather. It was William J. Records, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And it was my mother's maiden name. And so I guess it was somewhat of a tradition, or that's where they went for middle names, was the mother's maiden name. And it's R-E-C-O-R-D-S. And it happened to be that I turned out as, you know, grew up and then got into radio as a disc jockey. Now, today, if you did it today, that would mean, I don't think it would mean anything, because vinyl may be making
a minimal
comeback in an album form.
Yeah.
But certainly radio stations are not playing discs at this point in history, at any rate.
No.
So,
no, my middle name would have been then Yenjayeski, which wouldn't have been as fun as Records for a career that you've had. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Now, you were pretty fascinated with radio as a kid. Is that what propelled you to make it a career? You know, I know you had influences when you were in Ann Arbor and Detroit, where you grew up, and I know in Chicago you really love listening to Ron Britton. I've heard you talk about that before. But what really said, you know what, I'm going to try this. Like, I want to do this for a living.
Well, I look back on it, and there wasn't a moment in my life that I was not fascinated with radio. And I think that it might be, and this is just hypothetical. Mm-hmm. My father was blind, and so there was no... His access to media was entirely the radio.
Yeah, right.
And I think that might have something to do with my fascination with radio. As a Boy Scout, I sold Christmas wreaths door to door, and you got to keep part of the money. And with that money and some money that my parents gave me, I purchased a 6-transistor radio.
Oh, cool.
And then my dad listened to his news broadcasts that evening on my radio. I built crystal diode radios and cigar boxes when I was a Boy Scout. There just never was a point where it wasn't a fascination. There was a point in college where I was a communication arts major at Michigan State where I was taking radio and TV courses, and I did like the television aspect of directing, but the radio machinery was already rolling.
Sure.
And I got a job offer to go to Philadelphia when I was a senior in college, and so the TV aspect of it just sort of fell to the side, and the radio thing just opened up, and the rest is history.
Well, I'm sure once you figured it out, you knew that there was a lot more freedom and fun that you could have on the other side of the mic when you're on the air.
Yeah, but when you're on TV, it's only like an hour.
Right. That's true. That's true.
Maximum.
That's true.
You know, although now it's changed. I mean, you know, the morning shows, the GN morning show, that runs
6 hours.
A long time.
6 hours.
But yeah. But, you know, I've done some of that, and it has its advantages and disadvantages. Both of them do.
Sure.
I mean, you obviously don't need to worry about how you look when you go on the radio.
Sure.
But
I don't know. We got thousands of people streaming, watching us on the air. I can't. I got to wear pants every day now when I'm on the air.
You're right. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
Even that's encroaching on your wardrobe.
A little bit.
Right. Yeah.
We're talking to John Records Landecker, and there's more when we come back on 720 WGN.
Boogie check.
Hello, man. I'm calling about the boogie check.
Hey, I'm sorry. I know people on drugs are allowed on this program. Boogie check.
Check my boogie.
I am getting a boogular vibration from you. Yes, I am. Your boogular vibration registers about 9.
Oh.
Kid, are you there?
Yeah.
What is your name?
Jim Taylor.
Jim?
Kim. With a K, K-I-M.
Oh, Kim.
Yeah.
I don't like that name. Boogie check.
What are your measurements?
What are my measurements?
Yeah, I want to make you a string bathing suit.
Oh, you want me to? Oh, well, hey. My measurements are 42 and a half. You writing this down?
Yes.
19?
Yes.
And 45 as an RPM.
Dave Player back with you on 720 WGN, and we're talking to Chicago radio legend John Records Landecker. Now, you know, you worked in radio in Michigan, as you said, Philadelphia, and you were called up to the third radio market in the country. How did that all come about when you got the call for LS?
Well, this is the story as it's told to me. WLS was owned by ABC at the time.
Right.
And so was WABC in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in Philadelphia at a radio station, and our big competitor, the program director at that radio station, had a good relationship with the folks at WABC. And the story, as I'm told, is that the program director of WLS wanted to get a new nighttime jock.
Mm-hmm.
And so they sent out the word. And the program director at WABC in New York contacted the program director of this radio station in Philadelphia, our competitor, and he told the WABC program director, I hope you're following this,
mm-hmm.
about me, who relayed the information to the program director of WLS, who flew to Philadelphia, I'm told,
mm-hmm.
and listened.
That's what you had to do. People used to fly into the airport and just listen to the locals. Yeah, right.
And listened and then flew back. And then one day out of the clear blue sky, I got a call from him asking me to send a tape and a resume, which I did. And I was home for Christmas, and I was over at my in-laws' house and came back to my house. And my mom said, while you were gone, you got a call from WLS in Chicago. Here's the number. And the next day I flew in and had the interview and took the job and went home.
There you go. Wow.
Yeah.
And here's the funny thing. They wouldn't let you use your middle name, right, at first?
At first, no.
That's like ludicrous when you think about that, right?
You know, I don't know how certain program directors' logic. I've never been able to figure out their minds.
Yeah.
Just put it that way.
Yeah.
And no, they did not want me to use my middle name. That lasted not that long because that program director left.
Bye-bye, yeah.
Bye-bye. And the moment that happened, the middle name was back on the air.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you have it. And I know you're good friends with Bob Surratt, who I also absolutely love and revere. I still have all my WLS, you know, radio play charts somewhere
right.
in my house, stacks of them, of course, because I remember that was a destination to go get that and then see who,
yeah.
which DJ was being featured this week. But there were several golden eras of radio and radio in Chicago. The 70s at WLS would be at the top of the list.
Well, let me say, on behalf of all the other radio stations in Chicago in the 70s, the entire market was that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, it was hot.
I mean, WLS was not the only great radio station in Chicago.
Oh,
for
no,
a long time.
GN and Wally, and I mean, we had great success, but from a young perspective,
but
I guess.
Even WCFL for
part
of the 70s, and
yeah.
also that's where the Loop starts coming in.
At the end of the 70s.
Yeah, and that's where Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer come in.
Yeah.
And, Sky Daniels. You know Sky Daniels?
Yeah, I know the name.
Okay. Listen to this. Listen to how this goes around. Okay, so my oldest daughter, Tracy, mm-hmm. who is fronts a punk band in L.A. called the Walker Brigade, and they're recording an album. And Sky Daniels is now general manager or operations director of the hippest underground college radio station in L.A. So I get a message from my daughter Tracy saying, Dad, we're recording this album. When we get it done, would you mind giving Sky Daniels a call? And I said, of course I will. But, I mean, it's just so bizarre to be, like, decades later. And he was one of the guys that helped put the Loop on the map back in the day. So, you know, Chicago was a radio destination for most personalities in the country.
Sure.
And you didn't have streaming and satellites and online listening. And so the opportunities for work were far fewer than they are today. And the competition to get the openings on these stations that you wanted to get on was intense.
Well,
so I always felt Chicago during that era was the premier radio market in the country as far as talent was concerned from station to station to station.
But you talk about, you know, I was a teen in the late, and becoming a teen in the late 70s, and I knew, you know, you guys were big-time celebrities. I mean, you guys were the man. I mean, you know, through the whole 70s. It was pretty cool.
Well, I got to say, in all honesty, none of us at the station looked upon it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard that now from more than a couple of people in retrospect. But we were a pretty tight group with one another and had we considered the radio station, quote unquote, a tool for our amusement. and that's all we were really interested in,
you know,
was
that,
goofing on each other and entertaining ourselves.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone at the station at that time considered themselves, quote unquote, some sort of celebrity. I really don't. We didn't behave that way.
Yeah.
And I think if one of us did, the rest of us would have booted us out of the radio station.
But you said you did a lot of this to entertain each other. But a lot of the things that you came up with, the boogie check, which was a trademark, of course, of yours, a lot of the stuff came out of boredom.
That came out of boredom.
Yeah.
Yeah. you know, if you were a teen listener to WLS in the 70s and you thought the radio station repeated songs a lot, it's because it repeated songs a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you think you heard them a lot, imagine what it was like to be working there because you heard them every single time.
Sure.
And there was a system set up at one point where I think it was the top five records were linked to five different stopwatches that had a countdown of 95 minutes, I think it was, for each song. And when that countdown stopped, a light went on, the clock reset, and you played that song next, no matter what it was. So I'm bored, I'm rebellious, and the competition at WCFL, I think at that time, was Dr. Brock. I think he called himself Dr. Brock.
Okay.
And his trademark was "Let's Boogie," and the phrase "Let's Boogie" was a cliche at the time, and it was also being used in marketing about on T-shirts, and sure, there was some sort of logo that went with it. So that was some other influences. I decided that one night out of nowhere that I'd call it Boogie Check and just started answering the phone. That's it, beginning, well, middle, and end. And I had no idea what would follow. Let's put it that way.
Well, you know, you said it was kind of structured as far as the music and stuff was concerned. So now here you are doing some more spontaneous, interactive kind of stream of consciousness kind of conversation. And I remember you wrote this. I think you wrote this in the book about a caller, you know, called up and live on the air. And at this time, you know, the caller said the word on the air, and he just bleeped that.
And so did you.
And so did I. But the news spread very quickly. Like, that was, of course, probably a very cool thing because people heard that on the air. But there was really no delay system. So
whatever you
got is what you got.
Right. Well, first of all, radio stations that played rock music did not take any phone calls.
Right.
Period.
Yeah.
Unless it was a request or a dedication. But there was nothing like this anywhere.
Right.
And there had never been anything like this anywhere. And it just turned out, luckily for me, that it was a perfect storm of something that I had an ability to do, which I did not know prior to starting it, and teenagers. And yeah, the lack of delay certainly helped boost it because the Big F was on the air, and the station had to devise a method of
delay.
A delay.
Yeah.
They had to put together a delay, which of course now is something almost any station that does talk radio of any form has.
Yeah. I've only hit it once in the middle of the night.
It's part of their everyday business.
Sure.
But at the time, this was pretty sensational. And I was very lucky, let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
Especially to do something that had, but it's my, to match my personality, it's perfect. Oh, good. I didn't do anything to prepare for it, and it's a success.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. If you can get away with that.
I didn't do any work, and it's big.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, and this was a big era, too. I mean, this was big time sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and you were a big part of that scene at that time, too.
I did fall into that, yeah.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. I did my fair share of all of those three things.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it was part of the culture and part of what you were doing. I mean, it was that way, right?
If you were going to fall into it, I mean, yeah. I don't think, well, I know that a small minority of us actually went into that with both feet. The rest of us at that time might have dabbled and gotten out of it or not done it at all. But there certainly was that element to it. I think it was far more prevalent in the rock musicians of the day
than it was actually
in radio.
Sure.
If you wanted it, it was there.
It was there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. After the success of LS, you went to the Loop, Oldies 104.3. You did a stint here at GN, back to LS, and I know that I had heard you talk about getting tired of playing music from the 70s and 80s, and you decided to retire. And I know maybe that's not the right word. Retire from doing what you were doing at the time. Let's say it that way. Do you miss it? Do you miss being on the air regularly? I mean, do you notice that? Does it bother you?
Well, yeah. Yes and no. Okay. First of all, no, I didn't retire.
I
left.
Right.
And this isn't my phrase, but I think it fits. You know, I didn't leave radio. Radio sort of left me.
Yeah.
By the way, that's our new puppy in the background, if you can hear him.
Very sweet.
Playing with our older dog.
Nice.
And chewing up the carpet. Fantastic.
I'm so sorry. If you want to get that, please.
No, it's all right. We can always get another one. I'll just move to another room.
Another dog or some more carpet?
No, more carpet.
All right.
I love the dog.
Okay.
Carpet. Carpets come and go, but dogs.
That's true.
That is true. I'm sorry. What was the question?
Well, it was about radio leaving you more or less.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I would love to do a, how do I put this? I would love to be part of a team of people who did a successful radio program. Let's put it that way. I don't want to sit in a studio by myself doing anything, quite frankly.
Yeah.
The opportunities to do that are not in abundance,
mm-hmm.
put it that way.
Yeah.
And I would say that most of those opportunities are either in morning radio or on talk stations or, you know, and
sure.
or a combination of both.
Love to see you.
And that opportunity is not, and maybe I'm not talented. I mean,
come on.
No, seriously. I mean, I've tried it. I was on GN for a while.
You were.
I was on LS for a while. Nothing came from it. It may not be my cup of tea, so to speak.
You know, there's always opportunity to hang out and fill in and do those things and dip your toe back in and see if you love it, because your name is synonymous with radio in Chicago.
Okay,
you know?
I do love it, but the key is I won't do it alone.
Gotcha.
Okay, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be like Steve Cochran with nobody else around him.
You know, and he brings...
That is horrible. That would be a horrible situation for me. And that would describe the situations that I found myself in, was by myself. And if you go back and look at the success of WLS, even though you may have only heard one air personality on the air at the time, there was a dynamic team working with that person.
Sure.
There was engineers on the air pushing the buttons at the time. There was a synergy with the promotion department, the programming department. And then when I did the shows at 104.3 in the 90s in the morning for 10 years, which, by the way, is the longest job I ever had, it was part of a team. I had at least, you know, Catherine Johns and Rick Kempfer and Vince Argento Richard Cantu and others, too.
But I think that's what Jimmy's built here too a little bit, though, is that's what he likes. He likes the team. So Steve is surrounded by people in studio. Roe is surrounded by people in studio.
Well, that's
Unfortunately,
Jimmy was also the general manager of the Loop when I was there, and for me, that was a disaster. So who knows? I don't know.
Who knows?
At any rate, that's my, and that's what transparent is.
Yeah.
You see, that's what fascinates me about that, is that Transparent also has this synergy between all the people who work on it.
Gotcha.
And I think that, along with it being an incredibly well-written, produced, directed, and acted show, is part of its success. So I guess that's a long-winded answer.
No, saying, I like it. Yeah, I hear you.
You know, if you put me with a group of people, I'll probably do anything.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know,
all right.
I'll be on your trivia team.
I love it. Well, and then, but you did talk about when you left that you were tired of playing the same songs, and you said that you would play the same songs over and over again. I have to ask you, because, I mean, a legend in Chicago radio, doing what you did in the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s, was there a golden age of rock and roll in America in your mind, and when was it? Like, what really says, wow, this is rock and roll?
Well, I mean, historically speaking, I don't think anybody can argue that the quote-unquote golden age of rock and roll, it starts somewhere in the late 50s and goes through the 60s.
Sure.
Because that's where the genre, if you will,
sure.
was born. Now, after that, I think it depends on how old you are.
Yeah.
And I think that's also very appropriate.
But for you,
I don't look back on my parents' mm-hmm. era and think that music was fantastic.
Yeah,
I wouldn't expect. Amy hates the music from the 60s.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I love it because I graduated from high school in 1965. She graduated from high school in the 80s. So
yeah.
that's, you know, that's what she likes, the music from the 70s too, quite frankly. But
so do I. I graduated from high school in the mid 80s, and I love the 70s. And now, and I'm sure you've listened to it a little bit too, and we've got a deal going on with MeTV FM.
Right.
This is like low power station that has become one of the biggest deals in Chicago, and they're playing the most obscure stuff sometimes from the 60s, the 50s, the 70s, the 80s, and 90s. No one else has really done that in years, and it's a big hit. And so you get a taste of a little bit of everything from everybody's generation listening to that. And I think that's what people like to do. That's a podcast. That's like taking their iPod or their iPhone and just pushing random, and there's a show. You know, there's an hour of music.
Well, that's because the powers that be at most of the music stations in this country have homogenized it down to nothing. It is the same thing over and over again from market to market to market. And I thought, too, that there was an opening for someone with a bit of... And also there's a great... There's ageism, I guess that's the term. Mm-hmm. Whereas broadcasters were only interested in a certain demographic. And it ended at 54. And 25 to 54 was the advertising
right.
group. So that's obviously a younger skewing audience, and the people in that group now are not the same people who were in it, obviously, 30 years ago. So,
no, but I'm in the marketing business during the week. Right, I run a marketing firm during the week, and I got to tell you something. I know the people that have the money to spend on these advertisers aren't necessarily that younger demographic, you know.
I think there's been an ignorance, and I think there's been a shunning of that older segment of that demo.
Absolutely.
And that there is a market there for it. And ironically, too, I'm trying to remember the Marvel movie that I saw recently. What was the name of it? This current comic-based film comes out, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first song on the screen is a Leslie Gore tune called You Don't Own Me, which was like 1964 or something. And I turned to my wife and I said, what is this song doing in this movie?
Yeah.
And there's just a ton of tunes from the 60s, 70s, and early 80s that are being used by commercials.
And rediscovered, by the younger generation.
And also by in movie soundtracks on films that are aimed at 18-year-olds.
Yeah.
So
figure
that out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Love that.
I don't know.
Love that. Love that. What's next for you? What are you working on? What are you doing? What are you up to?
Well, I've been working on a screenplay for a while. I hope this doesn't sound too cliched. And that was... that's a work in progress.
Cool.
Over the summer, I got involved in theater here in Northwest Indiana, and I acted in a play for the first time since high school called Marvin's Room.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
And then also did sound design for a couple of other productions out here, one called Cabaret, the time-honored Cabaret. And... apparently, I didn't know this, apparently there is an organization for Northwest Indiana Theater that has an awards, that gives out awards at a yearly gala at Valparaiso University. And I was out doing the Emmys, and I started and I started getting these messages, forget the Emmys, you've been nominated for, and I thought, this is a joke.
How cool.
Right? You know? No, but as it turns out, whatever this group is, Cabaret received 10 nominations, and I got a nomination for sound design.
Oh, that's
which
awesome.
I'm not going to get into the... Hey! Excuse me.
you got to take care of business. I understand.
I'm not going to... It's believe me, it's not deserved. But at any rate...
Oh, that's great. Congratulations, man.
But... so that's been fun, and I don't know where that leads. And I've been out to Los Angeles, and a show has been purchased by Amazon that's in development, which is the creation of my daughter, which is based on our relationship in Chicago. So we'll see what happens with
love
that.
Love that. Wow, that's very cool. Very cool. See, there's no such thing as retirement. I knew that.
I've been busier than ever.
That's great.
You know, if you dislike the job as much as I disliked what was going on when I left, you'd leave, regardless of your age.
Yeah.
I think, anyway.
Of course.
So that's what motivated me. It was not the idea that I was going to retire, but...
Do something else.
Yeah, and I was of an age where now's the time to go do something else. If this is the way it's going to be, now's the time to leave.
Well, congratulations on this nomination, and I got to tell you, that's cool. And I got to tell you, and on this upcoming show that your daughter's working on, that could be very cool. I'm telling you, I miss hearing you on the airwaves, my friend, and this was an absolute thrill to talk to you.
Well, thank you so much for calling.
Absolutely.
Having me on.
All right. Well, it's the legendary John Records Landecker, and love to do this again, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Much more ahead on 720 WGN.